Good morning. May it please the court. John Michaels for the appellants, plaintiffs in this case, Mr. Remfer et al. I'm going to try to just break this down into a couple of separate inquiries to try to clarify this. This is a challenge to the military's mandatory anthrax vaccination program, and part of that, and a challenge to the Food and Drug Administration certification of the anthrax vaccine absorbed, which I'll probably refer to as AVA through this proceeding, and whether that, how much deference, literally, the FDA is entitled to in a situation like that, given the factual record that was alleged in the complaint. We're appealing from a motion to dismiss. I think with regard to the FDA's certification, there are a couple of issues that sit out there. And the first one relates to the Brockman study, which is the first and only human study of an anthrax vaccine, not necessarily AVA, but of an anthrax vaccine. That test was done in the 1950s. The first question was this study competent? Did it provide information that was useful? And based on what was alleged in the complaint, what did FDA abuse its discretion in certifying it and using it, that data? There are a number of factual issues with that study and what it means and how that data has been interpreted over the years. Specifically, what FDA is looking at or has done within the last 10 years is basically reversed some four decades of opinions from its own people, from DOD examiners, from outside third-party experts, to the extent that this study somehow showed that anthrax vaccine absorbed AVA that was tested then was efficacious, or there was evidence for its efficaciousness against inhalation anthrax. Up until about 1997, when the Defense Department got a dog in this fight, if you'll pardon the expression, I'll get PETA after me now, but got a dog in this fight, everyone, FDA, DOD, everyone was saying that there was insufficient evidence based on Brockman to certify that this vaccine was effective against inhalation anthrax.
But the one thing we do know from Brockman is that no one who was vaccinated got inhaled anthrax.
Well, what we
or
know
got from, fully no one who was fully vaccinated got.
Well, we don't know that, Judge Henderson, because
the five that got it were either, well, were not vaccinated.
They were either placebo, incomplete, or unvaccinated, right? The people, but I mean, of the inhalation anthrax cases. I mean, let me go right to it. That vaccination, all those cases occurred in the arms mill in fall of 1957, August, September, October. The vaccination program didn't start until May of 1957. To be fully inoculated, you had to go through at least an 18-month sequence. Three inoculations over a period of about 6 weeks, then a shot at 6 months, then a shot at 12 months, then a shot at 18 months. Obviously, they couldn't complete that at that time. So the inoculation was not complete, even though Brockman says in his study that he had placebo-complete individuals who were contracted the illness. So that's one problem with Brockman's evidence. The other issue is that even Dr. Brockman stated that his evidence was inconclusive with regard to inhalation anthrax.
The number is so small.
Well, that's right. The number was so small. And the FDA says, you know, it's a mistake to establish separate tracks in evaluation for inhalation versus cutaneous because the mechanism of disease is effectively the same. Yet that distinction was made by FDA, by DOD, by Dr. Brockman himself for 40 years until it became inconvenient. And at that point, I mean, there was no monstrous discovery that altered the landscape with regard to how this vaccine was assessed and how the anthrax disease worked. There are numerous other data holes in the Brockman study that are referenced in both our opening brief, in the complaint, and in the reply memo. The numbers don't add up. There are different numbers for placebo individuals in the test groups between 1957, 1960, and 1962 when Dr. Brockman publishes his studies. The FDA apparently believes that the study was a double-blind study, at least that's what they reference in their 2005 final order, and yet it's quite clear, up until that point anyway, that everyone believed that it was a single-blind study. And the single-blind study, in fact, Dr. Brockman himself kind of reverses himself in his March 2, 2005 letter that he submits to FDA when he says, oh yeah, I've always believed that my test results incorporated inhalation anthrax. That's categorically incorrect. Dr. Brockman at that point turns himself into the clock that strikes 13. You have to wonder about what he's saying now, and you have to wonder about what he said up to that point. When you put all this together and look at the holes that are in this investigation, it does not appear to be a clinically controlled or well-controlled field study. It barely has any controls on it. And that doesn't even go to the issue of the statistical problems that were that Dr. Brockman had with regard to his analysis, that the expert that the plaintiffs were using referenced in their complaint, Dr. Walter Shum, who's a social science statistician out of Kansas State and a retired Army colonel, raised when he did his own modern statistical analysis of the data. FDA fudges it a little bit when they, in their final rule and order, because they say, well, if you look at the numbers, they're spread evenly across the four mils, and they're spread evenly across the risks or the what were identified as high threat and low threat areas. Shum specifically refutes that in his statistical analysis and says if you apply modern statistical methods to this, you are not going to get any correlation for inhalation anthrax, and you barely get a correlation for cutaneous anthrax. The study simply doesn't hold up under modern statistical analysis. That's not really even referenced in the government's opposition. So the Brockman, the first question is, does the Brockman study give you good data? Again, for any vaccine, the answer I think is no. Now we go to the second issue, and if the answer that if whether we've raised an issue of fact on Brockman, and whether that's a valid study, if the court finds that that's not a valid study or that the data is subject to legitimate question, then this case should be remanded.
Why is that?
Because that study is the only human study.
But why is the only question whether you've raised an issue of fact?
I'm sorry.
We're reviewing, sort of seeing through the district court directly to what the FDA decided, and we're only asking whether there's substantial evidence. Is that right?
Right. Okay. If Brockman falls apart, if there is...
If it falls apart, but if all there is an issue of fact, a disputable issue of fact, then you would lose, correct?
That's correct, because you would defer to FDA, especially in an area where FDA is...
All right, I just want to be sure we were on the same
right,
page.
Right, I'm sorry.
That, standard of review.
That was my misstatement then. The second issue is whether Brockman's data even applies to what we're using now. And this goes right to the heart of this comparability issue. Brockman's vaccine was manufactured by the Department of Defense in the 1950s. It was then manufactured by Merck some period during the early 1960s, and then finally DOD transfers the license to the Michigan Department of Public Health, which later becomes Bioport, the current manufacturer. FDA rules are very stringent on what happens when a manufacturer wants to change its formulation, changes manufacturer, changes circumstances under which the vaccine is made. None of that is in the record. In fact, if you look at the way the final order is written, and you look at the response to the citizens petition, which was written in 2002, you find FDA casting DOD in the remarkable position of vaccine manufacturer, a fact that FDA had categorically denied in congressional testimony back in the late 1990s. Specifically, FDA told Catherine Zune, the head of CBER at that time, CBER, told Congress that DOD was not the manufacturer, and FDA couldn't regulate what DOD was doing with the anthrax vaccine because FDA only regulates manufacturers. Then in 2002, we end up with DOD being identified as the manufacturer. The reason for it is quite clear. If there are multiple manufacturers in the process, a relicensing determination and recertification and retest of the vaccine has to be done for each manufacturer. I think the district court was incorrect when it said the FDA's rule on comparability.
At Joint Appendix 229 in the decision, the agency does describe various tests comparing the different vaccines. It says that all three versions were tested, right, and demonstrated to protect against this, and the studies are in the record.
All three versions were not tested, Judge Tittle. There's only been one human test, and that was of the original DOD vaccine.
No, these studies comparing the vaccines. It says all three were tested. It says this clinical data comparing them. And they say even while limited, they reveal, et cetera, that they work similarly. That's all at 229.
Right. I'm familiar with that.
Yeah. Okay. So
why isn't that sufficient?
Yeah.
The reason it's not sufficient is because the tests that were done were not involving humans. They tried to use animals to do the testing. There is no correlate of immunity between humans and animals. They can't even use animals under their animal testing protocol because they cannot identify or have not identified yet the mechanism by which the vaccine works in animals and establishing a comparable correlate of immunity that develops in people once you give them the vaccine. If that happens, if that was the case, this would be a much easier situation because the FDA would be able to say, look, we've tested it in animals, we've used our animal testing protocol, we've got a valid result. They can't do that. All they can say is that it will protect some animals. It protects some and not others. It's real good for guinea pigs and rhesus monkeys, not so good for rabbits and others. But notwithstanding that, the only test that they've been able to do is they can say, well, it elicits a similar immunological response, but that's basically all we've got. And that is not sufficient under their own policy for a circumstance in which you have separate manufacturers making this vaccine over a period of years and introducing significant changes into the manufacturing process. You're at 229, Judge Tatel. Let me, if you go to 229 and look at the middle paragraph or the middle column on that page, it's pretty clear that what FDA's policy relates to with regard to comparability yeah. is for a single manufacturer. Mm-hmm. There are three separate manufacturers here. The initial one is DOD, then Merck, then BioPort. FDA is trying to, or has tried to, in its final rule and order, establish that DOD is somehow the manufacturer and says that DOD had oversight over all three versions and therefore was ensuring that all three versions were comparable. There is nothing in the record that approximates or comes close to the requirements for a change in manufacture, for example, and we cite this on page 40 of our opening brief.
I want to ask you about your Section 1107 argument. Your argument that, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. And your argument there is that in addition to the other problems you've identified, your argument, as I understand it, is that some people will be required to take the vaccine under a series that's not approved, right?
That's correct.
That it's been interrupted.
Yes, right? Sure. That's been a matter of public record.
Okay. So can you point to any place in your complaint where you allege that any of your plaintiffs will be subject in the future to this unapproved schedule?
Well, the identification of the individuals in the initial part of the complaint, where you see the part, it starts at the parties, it's page 12 of the joint appendix.
Right.
Each one of these people is discussed with regard specifically to their likelihood or their projected basis for taking the shots. We have one individual who's already taken the shots and has been off that and been subject to that unapproved schedule of inoculation. That's Staff Sergeant Kevin Ferraro.
That's too late then, right?
Well, no. I mean, if you look
at
the...
You're not suing for money, or are you?
Well, right. We're not looking for money damages here because these soldiers can't sue for that. What we're trying to do is get the vaccine use stopped. We're looking for an injunctive relief to stop it, force FDA to go back through and properly certify.
Right, but I was asking you specifically about the allegation that some of these people have started the drug and will be under orders in the future to take it on a schedule other than that's approved.
Correct.
So I was asking you where in the complaint you allege that in particular, and which is the plaintiff who faces that situation.
All right. Colonel Renfer, Lieutenant Commander Cohen, Lieutenant Commander Harris, Specialist Edwards, Private First Class Gerhardt, and Airman Palmer are all active duty service members.
But none of them, except for Harris, none of them say how many shots they've had.
No, none of these people are all deploying in and out of the area.
Right. But do you see my point, though, about my question? You, in order to make your 1107 argument, you have to have a plaintiff who is threatened in the future, who is A, taken some shots, had them interrupted, and is in the future under orders to take them on an unapproved schedule?
I respectfully disagree. The policy applies to these individuals now. They are on active duty, and they are being deployed into areas where this shot sequence is used. At the time the complaint was filed, they had not gotten, with one exception, Sergeant Ferrara, they had not received the shots. These individuals are electing their option under the first version of this case, which is to say, well, we could either protest, refuse the shots, and be court-martialed, or accept the shots and proceed in federal district court for some relief. Staff Sergeant Ferrara clearly falls into that category. He's taken the shots. He's been subject to it. He's already been inoculated with a vaccine that's going off-label and off FDA-approved schedule.
What does it say for him?
Yeah.
Well, the remedy for him is to enjoin the further use of the vaccine.
How does that help him?
If he gets sick from it, it's not going to help him.
No, but even if he doesn't get sick, how does it help him? He's finished the shot.
You're not making a claim about sickness anyway, are you?
No, we're not.
Effectiveness.
No, we're claiming that the using the shots under 1107 is illegal at this point because they are not, the vaccine is not a drug approved for its applied use as required by the statute. So we're looking for injunctive relief for him. To the extent that he's required to go back in and restart the sequence, the injunction will provide him with relief.
With who?
With Ferrara.
But he's finished the sequence.
He's not finished.
It doesn't
say Your Honor.
That. It doesn't say that in your complaint.
No, it just says that he's received vaccinations.
Right. The only person I could find who you actually allege maybe has started but not finished is Harris. But I couldn't find anything in the complaint where you're alleging this particular problem. That is that in addition to your general complaint that the vaccine has not been properly approved, that there's this subcategory of people who have started it and who in the future will be directed to take it on an unapproved schedule. That's a different cause of action in your complaint. That's your 1107 theory.
Right.
And I can't find anything in your complaint that makes that allegation.
Because
you have to have that to have standing, correct?
We have to at least allege that they're subject to the program.
No. For your 1107, you have to allege more. You have to allege that there are individual plaintiffs who have started the drug and who in the future will be required to take it under an unapproved schedule.
I don't believe that's correct. I believe we have to allege that there are people who will or are about to be or will be subject to receiving this as part of their active service. We've identified people who are going into the what they call the AOR.
I understand. That's your theory. I understand that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And I direct you to paragraph 111 of the complaint, which puts the plaintiffs in the program, alleges they're part of the program of taking these shots off sequence as part of count four. I've gone way over my time.
How about paragraph 107? That says DOD has been following a vaccination schedule inconsistent. Is the allegation there that all of this vaccination regimen is off-label?
Yes, at this point it is all off-label. They are inoculating people as they come into the area. They get a shot. They wait a couple of weeks. If they're still there, they get another shot. When they leave the area, they stop the vaccination sequence. And they don't start it again until they come back into the area and they pick up where they left off, irrespective of how much time has lapsed. Thank you.
Patterson?
May it please the Court, Melissa Patterson for the federal appellees. Your Honors, appellants here do not challenge the safety of the anthrax vaccine, and the bulk of their arguments do not challenge the efficacy of the vaccine against anthrax as acquired cutaneously. Rather, appellants here are arguing that the FDA acted arbitrarily and capriciously in approving the vaccine as labeled, which does not specify a route of exposure. And this argument rests on their disagreement with two key scientific determinations that the FDA made. One about how the vaccine protects against the toxic effects of the bacteria, and the second about the comparability of various versions of the vaccine. I'd like to turn first to their argument about the differences between cutaneous and inhalation anthrax. Appellants insist that these two forms of the disease are so different that they must be tested separately. They must have human studies to support their efficacy as entirely separate conditions.
Didn't the advisory committee to the FDA essentially agree with that?
The advisory committee did say that if looked at separately, there were not enough cases of inhalation anthrax in the Brockman study to make a significant statistical determination. And the FDA is in agreement.
It didn't look just at the Brockman study, did it say that there wasn't sufficient evidence to support it for inhalation anthrax?
I believe the panel was referring to the Brockman study when it said that in the proposed order. It said there weren't enough cases, and the FDA is not disagreeing with that. The FDA agrees that if you look at them as separate outcomes in that study, there were too few cases of inhalation to support a separate statistical determination. However, as the FDA explains in its 2005 final order, which is the only document that this court is reviewing in this challenge, the FDA explains, first, that the Brockman study, for the purposes of its effectiveness determination, actually included both inhalation and cutaneous cases in that determination. It looked at the placebo group. It looked at the vaccine group. There were 15 total cases of anthrax in the in the placebo group. Two of those cases were inhalation, and it looked at the combined disease total to make its effectiveness determination. So the 1985 panel actually misread the Brockman study when it said that its effectiveness determination only went to cutaneous anthrax. Second, the FDA explained why it makes sense, why it would have made sense that the Brockman study combined these putative two separate outcomes, because we know how the vaccine works. We know that what the vaccine does is prompt the body to form antibodies to a protein called protective antigen. Once the body has those antibodies in place, when the bacteria enters the body, regardless of whether you breathe it in or whether you touch it, the bacteria has the same mechanism to produce toxic effects, and that mechanism depends on the existence of PA, protective antigen, in order to combine with the other two proteins secreted, the lethal factor, the edema factor, in order to cause any of the symptoms of the disease. So if you have antibodies in your bloodstream that will effectively neutralize the PA that the bacteria begins to produce once it enters the body, there's no reason to think that those antibodies will only be effective against PA if you inhaled it as opposed to touching it. And the FDA not only looked at the Brockman study, it offered the scientific explanation, which plaintiffs don't actually challenge. They don't challenge the science, and there's no disagreement in the record about that underlying biological mechanism. The FDA also supported its determination, as it's allowed to under its regulations, by pointing to the numerous studies that show that animals vaccinated with this vaccine are protected against inhalation challenge. So you essentially don't have any disagreement about these scientific determinations. You simply have appellants' repeated insistence that you must look at inhalation and cutaneous anthrax as separate outcomes. I think the FDA has more than satisfied its burden to cogently explain why it exercised its discretion in this particular fashion, which of course is the review that this court is undertaking.
Let me ask you this. If the basis for the FDA's conclusion that the route of exposure does not matter, then how do you explain that all of the, you know, the Brockman, the panel, the IOM, whatever, all of them, CVC, are careful to say, we can tell you this about cutaneous, but we can't tell you this about inhaled? I mean, if the route of exposure didn't matter, then why did they separate the two constantly?
Well, Your Honor, in those references that you're talking about, nobody actually looks at the route of exposure. So I can't turn back time and look into the mindset of the leader of the ad hoc committee. But
wouldn't the implication be, if they separate them out, that if that they wouldn't have separated them out if they had thought it doesn't matter how the anthrax is contracted, this vaccine works.
Well,
because the route of exposure does not matter. They don't say that, I know, but I mean by saying something that implies it does matter, that is by saying we've learned this with cutaneous, we haven't reached that yet with inhaled.
Your Honor, if that is an implication of those statements, even if that somehow evidences internal disagreement at the FDA about whether route of exposure matters, and again, none of those statements actually take into account route of exposure, and I'm not sure of exactly the dates when the FDA learned about route of exposure.
I'm just trying to determine what the FDA's conclusion that route of exposure does not matter is based on.
Well, Your Honor, I would commend the IOM report, pages AR 3360 through 75, which discusses in some details with numerous references to published peer-reviewed studies that say regardless of route of exposure, the bacteria acts in the same way. At AR 3396, it's spelled out that the available data indicates that immunity to anthrax is associated with the presence of antibodies to PA. So there's really a lot of evidence in the record and no evidence to the contrary that the FDA's science is bad. So again, even if there had been earlier indications that I think at most suggest that those earlier record references were not considering the route of exposure, but even if they had, the deference that this court pays to the FDA is made to the final decision maker. So even if there had been disagreement earlier, as this court I think explained in the Serrano Labs decision, what this court looks at is the final decision maker and asks, have they given cogent reasons for the choices that they made? And certainly the FDA has done that here. And appellants, while they will point to these previous statements, actually don't take issue with the underlying science here. I'd like to turn to the comparability of the various versions of the vaccine. And first, there is extensive record evidence that tests were done to compare these various versions. At pages 71 through 78 of the Joint Appendix, there are human studies. It's a serological study, which means that you look at humans' blood serum in response to being vaccinated, and you test for the presence of antibodies. And the study concludes that the peak antibody response of the original DoD version of the vaccine and the version now being produced, what's now called Bioport, but it was MDPH, are very similar. I think the number is actually 1.3 versus 1.4 with a 40% negative rate. And I can't tell you exactly what those numbers mean, but they certainly look the same. And the FDA has made a determination that, again, is within its area of expertise, that these numbers show that these two versions, if you want to call them that, of the vaccine do prompt similar antibody responses in human beings. Moreover, there's animal data that shows animal data that shows that the vaccines protect against animals in a similar way. Now, I think appellant's main challenge here is that you have to retest in humans every time you make a manufacturing change. And that's simply without basis. If you look at the comparability guidelines that have been in place at the FDA for over a decade, the very purpose of those guidelines is to eliminate the burdensome re-clinical testing. Clinical trials just don't pop up out of nowhere. The Brockman study was a 5-year study involving over 1,000 workers, and it demonstrates that it's very hard to run a clinical field trial over and over again. The purpose of the guidelines is to show that if you can show that the manufacturing changes made did not affect your product, if your product is still doing what it's supposed to do, and in this case, that's to prompt antibody formation that protects against challenge by anthrax, then you don't need to retest your product. I'd also like to note that the idea that the DoD was somehow out of the picture and that FDA has rewritten history is entirely without basis. If you look at the record, both Merck, which was the interim producer of the vaccine, and MDPH submitted significant reports about how they were planning to scale up production of this vaccine, how they were planning to manufacture, and what changes they were making to the DoD's original manufacturing process. That's at pages 3782 through 3815 and 3943 through 47. There's an MDPH 1967 report on the manufacture of AVA. There's a 50-page report included in the record from MDPH showing exactly how, telling DOD exactly how it intends to manufacture this vaccine. So the idea that DOD somehow was, and also the DOD actually contracted with these various vendors. It's not as if, I think the phrase appellant used was, the DOD transferred the license. That's not quite accurate. The DOD, instead of mass producing the vaccine itself after it had originated it, contracted first with Merck and second with the Michigan Department of Public Health to actually produce the vaccine in large quantities. Turning briefly to the 1107 challenge, I believe Judge Tatel referred to the first page of the complaint, Plaintiff Harris. Plaintiff Harris alleges that he had six shots and may have to take more in the future, I believe. Six shots is the full course. There are three shots initially. There are three more shots at 6, 12, and 18 months. And what appellants are challenging is variation to that six-shot course.
And what about the boosters? You don't think
I don't believe they've actually made a challenge to the boost to the boosters. They've made a challenge that the six-shot series was interrupted, and they explained that that was due to a shortage that occurred after the armed services began.
So your point is that the basic series of shots is six.
Yes, sir.
And these people, their allegations all relate to those first six.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not the boosters.
That's how we read their challenge. And again, you can't argumentatively infer anything from their pleadings. Their pleadings simply don't say that anybody has started that six-shot series and that is going to be forced to take that six-shot series on anything other than the prescribed schedule of 0 to 4 weeks, 6, 12, 8 months. If there is such a plaintiff who has been interrupted, they're welcome to say so, but they actually just need to say so in their pleadings before they've established standing. There may also be some issues about redressability. I think Judge Garland referred to those. If somebody in the past had been required to take a putatively off-label dosage, since plaintiffs here are only suing for injunctive relief, that would not establish standing for this challenge here. If the court has no further questions, we ask that this court affirm the district court's dismissal.
All right. Does Mr. Michaels have any time left? All right. Why don't you take a minute?
Try to be as quick as I can. Let me direct your attention to the document filed at Joint Appendix 199 through 224, which is a summary of the evidence and the statements relating to the vaccine and the various official pronouncements regarding the vaccine. I would note again that the inhalation anthrax versus cutaneous anthrax distinction is not created by the plaintiffs. It's been in the government's purview, and it's been a distinction made by the government since the test was first initiated. I would also direct your attention to page 14 of that reference in the joint appendix. DOD's Dr. Kenyon at the Joint Vaccine Acquisition Program, which was an anthrax vaccine inoculation program conference, official transcript in May of 1999, said that we have to show FDA that these vaccines protect against an aerosol challenge. Aerosol, of course, is much more difficult to prove the efficacy than an aerosol against a parental challenge, or parenteral challenge. Anyway, it's pretty clear that this aerosol versus cutaneous distinction is significant. It's been in place throughout. And with regard to the shot sequence,
is there any your opposing counsel said that you haven't put in any challenge to the scientific conclusion that the biological mechanism is the same for cutaneous and inhalation anthrax. Is that correct?
At this stage, that's correct. That's one of the things we'd like to explore in discovery. There's no discussion of that in the...
No, again, you and I agreed before in discussing what the standard of review was that what we're reviewing is whether the FDA had substantial evidence, whether they acted arbitrarily and capriciously in the rulemaking, right?
Correct.
So you would not be able to put in any more evidence?
Not for this, but with regard to assessing what's in there now, I mean, one of the things we'd like to do is undertake some review of what's in the administrative record and explore the possibility.
You had that opportunity already.
I mean, we have looked at it.
Was there any evidence in the administrative record, either put in by you or someone else, for the proposition that the biological mechanism of cutaneous anthrax is different than the biological mechanism for inhalation? This is a point you just said.
Right.
Okay. I'm asking you to respond to that.
No, I don't believe there's anything that I've seen in the administrative record that indicates they're different. However, the difference arises in the context of how much of the material gets in. An inhalation case typically results from the inhalation of approximately 10,000 anthrax spores. Cutaneous is substantially less.
Okay, so this is an argument, but is there anything in the record that makes even the argument you're saying now that it would make a difference to a vaccine, whether it was cutaneous or whether it was by inhalation?
Just the assessment that I note, or just the citation that I gave you just recently, Judge Garland, with regard to the issue of aerosol challenge and the fact that an aerosol challenge is much more difficult to establish, and that it's more that a vaccine that works in one place may not work against an aerosol challenge, and that's in the joint appendix. It was also part of the record.
Sorry, what was the page?
It was page 14 of the JA-199 through 224.
JA-199?
Yes. That's where that reference begins.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.